Back now to Kirsten Gottschalk from the MRO and our own Dominic Ford discussing how the two different precursor instruments currently work on the site.
The two precursor telescopes already at Murchison demonstrate two ways that radio astronomers can detect radio waves. On the outside, at least, the white dishes of ASCAP look much more like the traditional image of a radio telescope. For high-frequency radio waves, dishes remain the preferred option, as receivers are expensive, and it makes sense to use large dishes to focus the radio waves onto a small number of detectors. But receivers for low-frequency radio waves are cheap. Rather than building huge and unwieldy metal structures to focus radio waves onto a small number of detectors, it makes sense to have many more smaller antennas. This is especially true in a remote location like Murchison, where keeping large moving structures in good repair is costly. The MWA takes this idea to the extreme, having over 2,000 tiny antennas called dipoles, each of which has no moving parts at all.
After our fabulous morning at ASCAP this morning, we're now at the Murchison Wide Field Array side of the site. We've had a bit of lunch and some cake, and we've now headed out along the trench lines off the MWA to the core. The configuration of the Murchison Wide Field Array is quite similar to other radio telescopes in that you have a dense core with lots of antennas, and then slowly as you get further and further away from the core, the telescope gets more and more spread apart and the antennas are further apart. So at the moment we're in the core of the Murchison Wide Field Array. It's about 500 metres away from the MWA office. Radiating out from that office are what we call trench lines. Holes were dug in the ground to run cables along, then filled in. So they look very much like roads, and there's seven of them radiating out. I turn around in every direction. There's just little MWA dipoles as far as you can see almost, and they're clumped into groups of 16 in squares of 16 that we call tiles. One direction I can see about 30 tiles are all clumped together, and then the rest of the MWA spreads further and further out up to about 2 kilometres from the centre, and we've got 128 tiles total in an area that's about 3 kilometres square. And each of these tiles, I walk up to it, it's got 5 by 5 metres of mesh in a big square, and then the dipoles are clipped onto there, the little antennas, and then they've all got cables running out of them that are hooked into this white box that sits off to the southern end of the tile. And that white box is called a beamformer. One of the special things about the Murchison Wide Field Array is that it doesn't actually have any moving parts. You can't point the telescope by moving a dish and pointing it to a certain section of sky. Instead, you point the dish electronically using a computer. And that's where the beamformer comes in. It forms the beam on the sky. So what happens is radio waves are coming in to the telescope, and each of the antennas is obviously at a different spot on the ground, so the radio waves will come into each of the antennas at a different time. And then all of the information is sent through to the beamformer, and the beamformer is told by the astronomer who wants to use the telescope where in the sky you want to look. And what it does is it adds a delay to each of the signals to combine the signals in such a way that you end up looking at the right spot of sky.
Each of the MWA's antennas receives radio waves from all over the sky. But the telescope's control software can choose which direction to look in by introducing small delays into the signals from some of the tiles. Radio waves from the east will arrive at the easternmost tiles first, before sweeping westward across the array at the speed of light. When it's completed, the SKA will produce a colossal amount of data. Since the aperture arrays will comprise of so many small antennas, each portraying their own separate signals, which will have to be added together, the total amount of data flowing into the control computers we measured in thousands of terabytes per second. This poses serious challenges for the engineers. It means that the site is littered with buried optical fibres, and it's quite impossible to carry all of the data that's flowing through them back to Perth. Instead, much of the computing power behind the SKA will need to be on site, within a few hundred metres of the antennas themselves. The whole point of locating the SKA in the desert was to get away from the radio hum that electronic devices produce. The engineers need to make sure that any radio waves that the computers produce are kept away from the antennas.
The sky has still got hints of blue, but it's mostly got grey cloud cover. We're expecting a little bit of rain tonight. Of course, all of the telescopes are waterproof. But not just that, they're also radio frequency proof, because there's no point coming all the way out here and then building a big power station to power your telescope and building your receivers and your electronics that control the telescope, because they will then produce radio waves. So everything in the MRO is shielded within an inch of its life, practically, to make sure that it doesn't produce any radio waves that could interfere with the telescopes. This is particularly important for telescopes like ASCAP and the MWA, because they are designed to be very, very sensitive. The MWA is designed to pick up some of the oldest signals in the universe, which will be extremely weak. So any kind of signal that's man-made and Earth-based will drown those signals out. So we have things like the CSIRO control building that has two massive airlocks to get into it, and they're not to prevent air coming out, but instead to prevent radio frequency interference. And I really like actually how they tested the building and made sure it was radio frequency tight. So they had a big signal generator inside the building, and then we're walking around with detectors and saying, okay, this weld needs a little bit more welding on it because it's letting some out, and then basically made sure the building was completely tight and nothing could get out. And the same has been done to all of the equipment over at the MWA as well. So we have these lovely white boxes sitting on the trench lines. They're called receivers. There's 16 of them. 8 tiles connect up to each of these receivers, and they basically look like kind of a white box with a fridge in it, and then a whole lot of electronics. And those electronics produce a lot of radio frequency interference, so the white box itself shields them really, really strongly to make sure that the tiles are picking up nothing but signals from space.
The MWA and ASCAP are being used to test the new types of radio receivers that the SKA will use. Placing them on a site which is very close to where the SKA will be built also tests whether that site is as good in practice as it looks on paper. I have to say, the first results that I've seen from both the Australian and South African sites are incredibly impressive. In the absence of mobile phones and television transmitters, these are sites where the background noise becomes significantly worse whenever communication satellites are overhead.
We've just left Bulati, hitting the road. It's about 7:45 in the morning. We're ready for our 8.5-hour journey home on the dirt and then the tarmac. We're looking forward to getting back to Perth, but we're sad to be leaving the Murchison.
Thanks to Kirsten Gottschalk from the International Centre for Radio Astronomy Research, and also to CSIRO for allowing us to record on the site, and Curtin University, who manage the MWA.